We all know that owning a small business means you wear many hats, but sometimes you really need an extra pair of hands. Upwork is how good companies find great and trusted freelance talent. With more than 2 decades of experience with the simple and ambitious goal of pioneering a better way of working, companies at every stage turn to Upwork to get things done and find more flexibility in staffing key projects and initiatives. They access a global marketplace filled with top talent in IT, web dev, marketing, and more. Posting a job on Upwork is easy. With no cost to join, you can register, browse freelancer profiles, and get help drafting a job post or even book a consultation. From there, you connect with freelancers that get you and can easily hire them and take your business to the next level. Visit Upwork.com right now and post your job for free. That's Upwork.com to post your job for free and connect with top talent ready to help your business grow. That's UPWORK.com. Upwork.com.
Welcome to the 20th edition of the Journal Sentinel Milwaukee Bucks podcast, the season wrap-up edition. I'm Matt Velasquez, and I'm talking with beat writer Charles F. Gardner. Charles, how's it feel to be through the season?
Wow, fantastic. Now we can watch the playoffs on television. Obviously, it's unfortunate the Bucks aren't in the playoffs. We had a lot of fun with that last year in the Chicago series. And I think they were expecting to be back there this year. Certainly in training camp, we all thought they might be able to win a playoff series. So it's been disappointing in that respect. But they're going to have some time to have a good summer and a big year coming up next year. For the team, third year under Jason Kidd, 500 record, and now a significant dip, 33-49. So, but some of the young players got a chance to play, prove themselves, and they're going to have to build on that as we go into next season.
Yeah, as the season came to a close, it became more and more of the story, at least from the Bucks, that hey, this was the year we were essentially taking the training wheels off, and we were letting the young guys run the team, and we let some veterans, you know, go and try to revamp what the core looked like and the importance of the core. And well, sometimes when you take the training wheels off, you fall down, and it's interesting that became more and more of the focus as the year progressed. Did you notice that as well, Charles?
No question. I thought Jason Kidd had an interesting comment in the exit day last week when he said, "We took the security blanket away." Remember that, Matt?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And I thought that was a pretty good comment when I was doing my season review. That stood out, that he said, you know, they took Zaza and Jared Dudley and even Ilya Sova, you might say, who were veterans who had been around, away. And they did that in part on purpose. They needed Jabari to play. You know, they needed him to play minutes. They needed him to see what he could do, especially after he had been out for almost the entire rookie season with an injury. They needed Giannis to play more, to be more a center of the team as they moved to the point guard. We saw that. But as you said, then there's some consequences to pay for that, and they were maybe harsher than everybody thought. But, you know, Greg Monroe came in, played a lot. He was new, had some difficulty adjusting, did well in stages. So it's something where they're going to have to try to put all these pieces together. It won't be easy, because now they're going to have to replace some pieces and try to get more production around that young core.
Yeah, and, you know, you look at adding Greg Monroe, and obviously the idea behind adding him was, well, let's invest in this younger, up-and-coming, you know, already established low post scoring threat, as opposed to re-signing, you know, these veteran guys, you know, Zaza, Ersan, you know, and Dudley, guys who'd be owed, you know, a decent chunk of money and would be either out of the team's control after a year or would need to be signed again in order to keep them. And so, you know, getting Monroe, they basically, you know, Jason Kidd said this, John Hammond said this, they got what they expected. They got the player who they had seen. But the problem was, the player they had seen wasn't really good on defense. And he didn't really get too much better on defense over the course of the season. And you know, granted, the Bucks as a whole weren't very good on defense, so, you know, individual breakdowns were more glaring because there wasn't help around to make up for that, you know. But oftentimes Monroe was supposed to be the guy to help and make up for other people's mistakes, and he wasn't there to do that. And so now that this team will have that core back, or is expected to have that core back, they have them all under contract, it'll be interesting to see which pieces return and how those pieces fit together, and if they demonstrate improvement either, you know, on a player-by-player basis or on a scheme basis heading into next year. Because we can pretty fairly say that the defense was really, really bad this year.
Yeah, it was bad. They couldn't guard the three-pointer. The younger players had trouble just catching up with the schemes. And, you know, Miles Plumlee, I guess, put it pretty well in the exit interviews. He, being a more experienced player, said he thought he didn't have as much problems. But he said if one guy was out of whack at all, that throws the whole defense off. And, you know, it was something that those young players had to learn. And remember, the bench was either injured most of the season or pretty young. You had guys like Inglis and Vaughn who were just learning, hadn't played at all. Inglis hadn't played at all his rookie season. Vaughn was a rookie. You had Johnny O'Brien's second year. So you just had a lot of inexperience off the bench and even in the starting group. So it was tough, and you didn't have the veteran guys to remember how Kidd always said Dudley would position the defense. Mm-hmm. The prior year, you didn't have that kind of vocal leader either, or that kind of experience on the floor. So I think that's what they're going to look for, to try to mesh with the young players that showed a lot of promise. You know, the veterans that they did have, unfortunately, were on the last year of their contracts and injured. Mayo, Vasquez, Bayless, all of them. Bayless, for his part, you have to say, played very well when he was on the floor. He was probably their best bench player.
Oh, no doubt.
He ranked fifth in the league in three-point accuracy, which was amazing. But again, he had long stretches where he was out with ankle injuries and knee injuries, and that hurt them. And of course, Mayo was out two different hamstring injuries, then vanished down the stairs in mid-March. We're not sure what happened there.
And not just got hurt, just was gone. Like, you know, he didn't show up to anything after that injury. And, you know, guys like MCW, you know, went out for surgery and came right back and was visible at practices and games. Steve Novak only played like 19 minutes after getting signed before he got hurt, and he was at every practice and at every game.
Everywhere, yes.
You know, but Mayo was, it was very obvious that he was in the final year of his contract and did not expect to return.
Right. So those situations meant that some of the guys they were counting on didn't produce at all. Basically, Vasquez missed 58 games, had the ankle surgery, and was ineffective at the start of the year as well before he went to the surgery. So I think getting those decisions right, what that showed is, okay, now when they get a redo here this summer with the salary cap and having some room and guys leaving on the expiring deals, they have to get it right, because if they don't, it's going to be very hard for that young group to carry through without some help. You know, Jason basically said that when I asked him about the bench on the exit day, and he said, look, you know, you look at the top teams in the league, Cleveland, San Antonio, you know, Golden State, of course, is beyond belief. Their bench could probably start for a lot of teams, right? You know, their bench wouldn't be that bad a starting unit for many teams.
No, they'd be great.
So where you got Sean Livingston, Andre Iguodala, guys like that. So he's saying we have to get to the point where we can rely on the bench again. And I thought one of his great strengths the first year was he played everyone. You remember, Matt, he played that bench, whether good or bad. He believes in it, but he couldn't He just simply couldn't do it this year. He didn't have anybody to be productive. And it got so bad that, you know, in February, he put Monroe and Michael Carter Williams off the bench and basically said in the pregame, well, I have to have a bench. They're going to the bench.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, some of those guys over the course of the year did show improvement. Like Tyler Ennis, by the end of the year, would seem to be a revelation. Like he was, yes, he was a much more confident, you know, a lot more smooth in his play. Seemed like he could manage the offense well. Acquitted himself, you know, as well as any of the Bucks players did on defense. And
Plumlee and Miles Plumlee as well.
Sure, and Ennis realized, you know, there was, hit a certain point where he looked around and said, "Wait a second. With this bench unit, if I don't shoot when I'm open, no right. one will." He was surrounded by basically four non-shooters a lot of the time, or three non-shooters and streaky Rashad Vaughn.
It made him grow up, didn't it? It made
yeah.
him grow up. And he told us, remember, Matt, he told us, he said, "Oh, yeah, when I'm in with that second unit, I realize I got to score. Nobody else is going to score." And I guess that was a Memphis game that you covered where he went nuts in the fourth quarter and the bench, which had been so terrible for so long, had its shining moment. That had to be its shining moment of the season, right?
Oh, absolutely.
And what, he had like 13 points in that fourth quarter. But he did.
And of course, no one remembers anything anyone did in that fourth quarter outside of John Henson and Matt Barnes. Because
right,
that totally
came later.
Yeah. Totally stole the show.
That made the Man, bench
play. That night,
still, the bench
that night was strange.
Bad.
Real
and
strange.
I remember the bench play. That night. So, you know, and Miles Plumlee certainly got his chance in part due to Henson's back injury, and he definitely made the most of it. And now you hear the Bucks officials saying they want to re-sign him. He'll be a restricted free agent. He's out of contract, but, and he's saying in the exit day that he wants to come back. So, as I wrote for Sunday's paper, all of a sudden there's a bit of a different dynamic around the center position. And you had John Henson playing power forward, but yet is that really a solution for the Bucks? Because they would rather have a power forward who can knock down some threes, just like everybody else in the league is doing. And that's not John's game. So it will be interesting to see what some of the resolutions, what some of the decisions are made this summer around those positions.
Yeah, so, you know, kind of we've referenced the exit interviews a couple times. Let's do a couple quick hits on the exit interviews. You know, starting with you, Charles, which interview, what person said the thing that stood out to you most during that exit day?
Well, I guess the one that surprised me the most was John Henson saying that, you know, he really thought a lot of the players weren't in shape in training camp. And Chris Middleton, then when he came by a few minutes later, absolutely verified that, didn't he, Matt? He said, mm-hmm. in his own case, he said he felt he wasn't in good shape because of the contract situation that he was signing. And this is not something that only has happened with the Bucks. This happens all over the league. When players are up for a big contract, they often do not work out too strenuously because they just can't risk an injury. Here was Chris going to sign a 5-year, $70 million deal. And even though he signed that in July, that still put him back a couple months, he thought. And he thinks he'll be coming in better shape in training camp this year. So that was interesting. I thought that was interesting that was something. Miles Plumlee was saying, "Hey, I was in the greatest shape of my life." So it wasn't everybody. You know, that was, he was coming into a contract year, as he pointed out. He was like, "I was going to be in the best shape of my life." So, and he was saying, even though he's signing with someone this summer, he still plans to work out. He said he's just not going to do anything stupid. I think that was his words. So there was some realization with the Bucks that they should have been in a little better shape from the get-go. And they certainly had a bad start. We always, you know, the first game,
oh yeah,
you know, 122-97, getting scorched by the Knicks, who were supposed to be terrible,
and ended up being what they were supposed to be.
That wasn't a good start, was it?
No, and the Knicks ended up being what they were supposed to be. You know,
right? But so that made it worse in the long run.
Yeah,
but, you know, and they gave up some some big point totals there in the first few weeks and got off to a bad start. And so that's something I'm sure is going to be a focus as we go along. I guess the other thing I thought was interesting.
Well, when it comes to working out, you know, Jabari Parker, he said, you know, obviously last year he was working back right. from his ACL right. tear, but he said, I don't know about everybody else, but I know about myself, and I know I'm going to be in the gym 24/7. You know, after giving myself a month to relax, I'm going to be in there all the time. And, you know, I think some people read into his quote, you know, he has an interesting way of talking, and he said, you know, if I surpass, you know, some of my teammates, so be it. You know, I don't think that was aimed at anyone in particular. I think that just meant, hey, if I'm at a super high level and other guys don't match me, you know, so be it. But I'm going to be at a really high level in terms of my workout regimen and how active I am over the summer. And that's what it comes down to.
He mentioned that he, you know, had been working since January, basically.
Of the previous season.
Of the previous year, without a break, trying to come back from the knee injury. So I asked him, I said, well, you know, take a little time off, which is very understandable, and hopefully he will and get rejuvenated a bit. And he said definitely, you know, that's what he's going to do. Maybe he said about a month, and then he's going to be back and raring to go. And I thought the funny quote he said I may have the itch in about a week.
Yeah.
but he's probably going to try to, you know, get some rest and rejuvenation before he comes back. And he said he will be working out, and you know, but obviously he had a big turnaround, just a terrific turnaround after the Rising Stars Challenge, and everybody kid from kid on down in the organization kind of joked about it and said, well, what happened to Jabari up in Toronto? He was a different guy when he came back from that All-Star weekend. But I think it was just a combination of things. But I do think it was great he was picked for that game, Matt, because he had done enough, even though he'd struggled a little bit early in the season. He struggled a lot in some areas, you know, on defense and elsewhere. But he was making a contribution. He certainly deserved to be there. And then when he came back, he went to another level. Mm-hmm. With his play, his confidence, you saw it. What would you say about what you thought changed with Jabari?
Well, I think he just became more assertive, and he started knocking down that mid-range jump shot with a little bit more regularity. And so I think that gave him a little bit of a different dimension on offense, where teams weren't just sitting on his drives. You know, they had to at least pay attention to when he busted up the mid-range. And, you know, he shot a couple threes, you know, went 7-for-23 on threes after the All-Star break, after only attempting like 7 before.
So he's going 0-for-7.
He was 0-for-7 before. So he started spreading things out a little bit. And, you know, it's interesting. He mentioned on the exit day, and I talked to him about it, you know, very briefly in Boston when I was up there, that he understands and has heard, you know, obviously that Jason Kidd and the organization, you know, have an interest in him shooting more threes, you know, but he said it's just not what he loves. Like he loves the mid-range. He thinks that his game is better suited for the mid-range, and he'll still shoot threes when he's open, but he feels more comfortable and really likes working on that mid-range, which not a lot of guys, you know, not as many guys do now as it did in the past. But that's something that he wants to improve on, because if he can have a, you know, you see guys, you know, I'm not saying that Jabari Parker's Dirk Nowitzki or anything like that, but if you look at guys like Dirk, and he's still making a living, a fairly good one at that, in the mid-range, you know, because that's like no man's land. Guys are selling out against to defend the three, and they're selling out to defend the paint. And so if you're going to leave that space open, if you're an elite mid-range shooter, you have probably more room to work with now than you would have in the past, you know. And then another thing about Jabari that he mentioned that I thought was interesting during that exit day was, you know, usually ask the guys, hey, where are you going to work out and who are you going to work out with over the summer? And, you know, he mentioned he'd be in Milwaukee a lot, but he said he doesn't plan on working out with anybody other than his teammates for his career. That's just not how he's wired, you know. And, you know, it's not detrimental or negative for guys to work out with players from other teams. I mean, you hear
like Chris did with Dwayne Wade, and even Chris said, remember, Chris was asked about it, and he said, well, I don't know if that'll happen again. That was just kind of maybe like a one-time thing. There was a trainer who both Dwayne and Chris new, and that was kind of part of the reason that they got together, but it worked out pretty nicely. So, you know, I don't see anything wrong with it. I know there's talk about it among in NBA circles, but, you know, I still think, hey, you saw Chris and D-Wade. He competed as hard against the Bucks as anybody when mm-hmm. he played in the regular season. So I think if you're a professional, that shouldn't be an issue. But you do like to see players working out with their teammates. And, you know, last summer in Las Vegas, the Bucks, some of the young players were there, and they got to kind of hang out and be together. And that always builds some camaraderie, and that's good to see as well.
Yeah, and I know it's something that fans read into a little bit more, like, you know, hey, I'm not working out with anybody but my teammates. You know, this is a team game. And that's all I care about is my team. Everybody else can, you know, go away. You know, it kind of reminds me of, you know, back when I lived in Cincinnati, you know, Joey Votto said something about the Cubs, your Cubbies.
Cubs, yeah.
And he was, you know, I guess some kid in Cubs stuff asked him for an autograph. He was like, forget about it. You know, and some reporters asked him about it. He's like, they're the enemy. Why would I sign this kid's stuff? And people in Cincinnati loved it, and people everywhere else thought he was a jerk, you know. But, you know, that's kind of how it goes. I feel like, you know, people in Milwaukee might see what Jabari said and go, all right, cool. Like, he's with us. He's our guy. And people other places might be like, well, you could probably improve your game by playing against some of the best people in the NBA if you could train with, you know, Kevin Durant or Draymond Green or whoever, you know.
Right. And it's just a different approach. You know, it's whatever works for you. I think if that works for Jabari, that's good.
Sure.
And I'm sure he has people that he can work out with and people that help him. And if it works for someone else the other way, like as Chris Middleton did, then I think that's good. That's good too. Whatever helps you improve your game. So I thought those were some of the interesting things from the exit interviews. The other funny thing, Matt, I think the funniest thing was
Rashad Vaughn.
Yeah. You and I both had Rashad Vaughn talking about the rookie wall. And I think someone asked him, might have been Eric Nain, asked him about the rookie wall. And he said, oh, yeah, you know, I almost died one day in practice, is basically what he said.
He acted like he was running into the wall as he was answering this question. He was like crumbling in front of our faces.
Like a literal brick wall. I thought he was going to say it was during some game or it was during, you know, something, a specific moment in a game. But no, it was in practice. And he said right here at the Cousins Center. But he said that was his rookie wall moment. So pretty interesting. But he definitely was very honest. You got to love Rashad for his honesty and saying he had a lot of things to learn, you know, the second youngest player in the league, and had a lot of ups and downs, and, you know, was hesitant to shoot a lot of the time, but learning. And I think it's hard to make a judgment, you know, on his game in one season, especially when he's 19 years old, or he was 18 when he was drafted. So it'll be interesting to see, can he develop? I know the coaches like his defensive game. Joe Prunty said he thinks he can become a defender in the league. He's 6'6", and he moves well. So it will be interesting to see. No guarantees with the 17th pick, as we all know, but you never know. Giannis was the 15th pick. And of course, has developed into an incredible player, and one the Bucks probably top prospect to be an all-star in the future.
Yeah, and speaking of Giannis, I think we'd be remiss if we didn't mention MCW's comments from Exit Interviews. He was
about that. Yes.
Yeah.
What did you think of that? Him saying basically that, hey, this is all overblown about Giannis being the point guard.
Yeah, he was really strong about in his comments there, you know, very strongly stated in everything he said, basically just putting out there, hey, listen, you know, Giannis, if he's playing the point guard on offense, he's not guarding point guards on defense, and that's what I would do. You know, so if they played together either on a starting lineup or in the game at any point, which they have done in the past, you know,
and they
can for sure, you know, he would be guarding the point guard, and that doesn't change anything. And so everybody thinks, oh, Giannis is the point guard, you know, and you know, he's been hearing that all while he's been hurt. He only played five games after the All-Star break, after before getting hurt.
So right, he's had to listen to this for 2 months.
He's been hearing that, and all the Bucks fans.
I would say that if you're handling the ball, you're the point guard.
Okay? Sure, sure.
If you are handling the ball primarily, I understand. Now there's multiple ball handlers all around the league. You know, MCW is saying it's like LeBron James or Draymond Green, but no, I don't think it is like Draymond Green. You know, Draymond Green is not bringing the ball down the court every time or three quarters of the time, right?
No.
So I think it is different. And I understand his point, and his point's well taken. But I still think, you know, you listen to Jabari or some of the other players talk at the end of the season. They said, when Giannis went to point guard. You think Jabari liked it that Giannis went to point guard? You
know, absolutely.
His numbers went through the roof. Okay. So I think
the interesting thing is that
he is the point guard, okay? And you know, John Hammond also said, okay, he's going to be listed at forward on the roster. You can list him wherever you want. I don't care. But the thing is, he is handling the ball. You can list him at forward. He's going to guard forwards. He's very versatile, but he's been put at the center of the offense handling the ball. You know, you call it what you want. You know, Jason Kidd at one point during the season basically quit referring to all that, and you just call him the point guard. Well, you know, that's what it is.
Right. And you know, Hammond said next year when they put a starting lineup out there, it'll be, you know, two guards, two forwards, and a center. And that'll be what their starting lineup is. And obviously the way they work together and operate on the court will be different than most teams, but that's how it'll be. And so that kind of gives us some insight as to, okay, Giannis and Jabari will be the two forwards. Chris Middleton will be the two guard. And then they're leaving a point guard spot open. You know, in terms of a traditional point guard spot in the starting lineup, you know, the MCW still sees as very much a position that he can compete to own.
And I think he's right about that, because there's going to be time, there's going to be minutes off the bench, there's going to be minutes guarding, as he said, the other point guard. So he has but his role is a little different than if he's not handling the ball.
Oh, sure.
You know, and that spot is... You know, that spot is going to be up for grabs, I imagine, as far as who's going to be in the starting lineup next year. It might be somebody that's not on the current roster.
It could be, but I'm sure MCW has been, chafing a little bit because he's heard all the fans. I mean, we've heard the fans.
But also, what are the Bucks saying coming out of the season? Jason Kidd and John saying, look, we need shooters. You know, mm-hmm. We need shooters. So it also would not be surprising to have a better shooter in that backcourt than MCW playing in the starting lineup and maybe handling the ball some of the time, but a guy who's more of a shooter to complement Chris. That's certainly a possibility, mm-hmm. Right? Especially if you got Monroe and Parker in that lineup as well. You need more shooters on the floor. And what did the management say when we asked about MCW? They said, hey, look, the area he has to improve is shooting, and that's so important. And if he can start making some of those shots, maybe, you know. But the problem is, I think it's not just the medium range shots there. They need some more 3-point shooters on the floor.
Oh, yeah. And John Hammond mentioned, you know, specifically the MCW, he said next season, like now, that's the time he needs to start making threes. And he specifically mentioned they need him to make corner threes. Those are the closest 3-point shot on the court. They're the most efficient shot you can take. Right. And, you know, if he can catch the ball, you know, Hammond was saying the ball goes in rotation, gets to him at the end of the rotation, he has a good look. He needs to be able to take it with confidence and knock it down at a high percentage, you know. And if he can do that, then obviously that changes everything about his game and the way the Bucks can space the floor and all that stuff. But if he can't do that, then he is really only useful as a, you know, 6'6", you know, stopper on the defensive end against point guards.
And, many times does that ball swing to the corner and the Bucks were hurt by that how many times during the season, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But doing it on the other end was a real struggle. Middleton did it at times, but he has other roles to play. I think what I see is if they can get that shooter, Matt, that one or two good perimeter shooters, it just takes a lot of pressure off Chris. Then maybe he, you know, we saw the night he hit 8 out of 9 threes against Minnesota. I mean, he can do it, but there are other parts of his game that are equally important to the Bucks: the post-up game, the pick and roll. He's a ball handler. He does, you know. That was the other thing that was funny about the exit day. You're talking about some of that, where Chris was reminded that what he said in the preseason, where he said, "Oh, I think I won't have to do as much," and we all had a laugh about that, and even Jason laughed about that, right? Where he said, he had to do quite a bit. he averaged the fifth most minutes in the league, or whatever it was. At one point, he was second, I think, in minutes. So, Chris said, "Yeah, I was wrong about that," and everybody laughed. So, that was certain. Yeah.
So we'll be talking about a lot of these things probably all summer, up until we actually get some answers as to what the roster is going to look like next year. But for now, before we move on to our next topic, I know that you have in Wednesday's Journal Sentinel are going to be your individual grades and your team grades. You want to give us a little bit of a teaser on what those might look like?
Yeah, I can't disclose those, but they are in, and I guess I might tinker with a couple of them, but hopefully they're in and done. And no A's and no F's as of this moment. Maybe I'll change my mind. I've given F's before. Larry Sanders and Corey Maggette come to mind. So there have been a few of those. Steven Jackson didn't have a real good grade, as I recall,
in his
brief stay in Milwaukee. But
No F for Dallenberg?
Yeah, I think Dallenberg got an F.
I was going to say.
I'm pretty sure he did. Yeah, I've given three Fs. I've given three Fs. It's very good, Matt.
I know your history with him.
I haven't kept a log. I should have kept a log of all my grades over the years. But I think you'll find it interesting. Some of the team grades are interesting. And, you know, suffice it to say that there's some interesting grades in there. And I think we tried to break down each player a little bit and a bit of his game and what they contributed during the season. Go through offense, defense, intangibles, coaching, personnel moves, and overall. So there's some great. So please look for that online, JS Online, and in Wednesday's Journal Sentinel.
Yeah, and you know, I absolutely have a little bit of knowledge of your grades so far, and right. I can let everybody know that these grades are not reflective of, oh, the Bucks are up and coming, and they're not judged against themselves entirely. This is an assessment of a 33-win NBA team that failed to meet expectations.
Correct.
So it's
to be on this season now.
And realistic.
Count the potential. You got to take into account the potential somewhat, yes. But they are grades of this season. And remember, the previous season, they were 41-41. So how the team does definitely affects overall grades.
Exactly. And so that'll be Wednesday. They'll probably go up tomorrow night online, Tuesday night, if people want to get them as soon as possible. But they'll definitely be in the Wednesday Journal Sentinel, and they'll be online by Wednesday for sure. The next step, obviously, is the draft. And we got some more clarity.
Next season. How about that?
The next season, yeah. So we got some clarity on the draft, which the tiebreaker for the Bucks went the worst possible way.
Oh, yeah. I saw that, you know, that was kind of interesting that they lost two tiebreakers to Denver and Sacramento and went to 10th. They have a 6.5% chance of getting into the top three. And, of course, that would be just what they're hoping for. They've had the 10th pick in the past with Brandon Jennings and Jimmer Fredette in the I guess that was 2011. So they've had the 10th pick, traded that, of course, in the deal for Tobias Harris, passed over on Klay Thompson. So you can talk about that. But there was a big trade in getting rid of some contracts, and they wound up with Tobias, who wasn't too bad a player, and then was traded again later. So, but the draft history of the Bucks, certainly checkered history, a lot of hits and misses. You know, when I was looking back since 2000, the 2 years that really stick out, back-to-back years, they had number 6 and number 8, Matt. Ejion Lien, drafted by the previous general manager, Larry Harris, and we all know how that turned out.
We do.
And then Joe Alexander, number 8, the first pick by John Hammond. And in fairness, John's done very well with, you know, well with his drafting. When you look at Giannis and you look at some of the other picks that he's made, guys that have contributed. Jennings was a starter for 4 years, was the number 10 pick. But that Joe Alexander pick was just a bust. And he didn't stay in the league, obviously. And so that was one that hurt. But those 2 years back-to-back were tough years. Of course, Andrew Bogut, number one, was a good, solid player. But the Bucks didn't draft in a year when there was a lot of LeBron James out there. They drafted in a year when the top pick, and deservedly so, was Andrew Bogut. But it wasn't the type of crop that we saw in, say, 2003, as when Bogut was selected in 2005. So certainly the shining moment in the draft was Giannis. Guy,
no question. He's the guy
for about the 15th pick. And if you look at that draft now, you'd say, boy, where would he have gone, Matt? 1, 2, or he would have gone very, very high.
Oh, so, unquestionably.
Yeah. So the draft will be something, but I think just as important in the summer will be what kind of veterans, as we've talked about here earlier, they can bring in to make an impact, and what type of shooters they can bring in. You know, they tried to bring in Vasquez as a shooter, and of course that didn't work. They were hoping Mayo still had something left. He didn't. You know, it's that type of thing. So they really have to find some guys who are going to contribute while the other guys, obviously you and I have seen Giannis and Jabari working on the threes every day, but as you pointed out earlier so well in the podcast, that's not going to be their game. They can supplement their game with that. They can be a threat, which I think is good. But that's not going to be the important part of their game.
Yeah, and the tough part with this draft, especially sinking down to 10, is that after the top three, this draft is just a toss-up. It's really hard to tell exactly what... I mean, I'm looking at a couple different mock drafts right now. And
insight, Matt, because you... Well, follow the college game, and you have a bead on what type of talent will be in the draft.
Well, it's all over the place. There's a lot of power forward center type guys, especially in the top 10 area, which, you know, maybe the Bucks could use a center, but not really. I mean, unless they make a trade and move somebody, they've got three, you know, unless somebody moves. But obviously, you know, we've heard and expect that they will at least make an initial offer to Miles Plumlee. With the cap moving up, who knows if some team just doesn't throw some crazy amount of money at him that they can't match, or it would be unwise to match, you know. But they're going to try and get him back. And you know, then obviously they have Henson on his contract, and Monroe for at least one more year on that deal. So, you know, adding a big, you know, would only make sense in the context of losing one. And I don't know exactly who that would be. So it's hard to figure out where that would be. Obviously, you have guards who could help them, you know, and that are top 10 quality guys. You're looking at like Chris Dunn, Jamal Murray, Buddy Hield. You know, Demetrius Jackson's kind of a fringe top 10 guy too. You know, Timothy Luwawu, another guy who could go, you know, in the area that the Bucks are at. So those are guys that could probably help them guard-wise, and not all of them are made equal in terms of shooting. Obviously, Buddy Hield is the best of those shooters, and, you know, he proved that time and time again during this college basketball season. But he's already older than Giannis and Jabari, and he's 22. And
where do you see him going, Matt? What range?
It's I mean, I've seen places where he's gone as high as 5. Some, you know, during the NCAA tournament when he was going off, you know, some people had that knee jerk reaction saying, "Oh, maybe he could go 3." It's like, I don't think he'll go that high. Right. You know, NBA teams don't typically, yeah, at least nowadays, I don't believe it's typical for them to take a 22-year-old with the 3rd pick.
No, it hasn't been, has it? No.
No, and he's really good. I mean, there's no question he's really good, and I think he'd be able to compete right away, maybe not necessarily as a starter, but at least as a solid rotation guy. I think that's reasonable. You know, so it'll be interesting to see who in that guard crop slips down, if that's who the Bucks are looking for in terms of depth at the guard positions, because that seems to be where they need the most depth. I mean, Grievous Vasquez isn't coming back. OJ Mayo isn't coming back.
Nope.
You know, Jared Bayless, maybe he'll come back. You know,
they probably would like him to come back. But again, he is a free agent. So
yep.
There's not a guarantee there. And they're losing some spots there. You've also got a couple players at the end of the bench, Damian English, maybe Johnny O'Brien. You don't know what their future will be.
And right now, you know, in terms of guards, Tyler Ennis is due to come back. Rashad Vaughn is due to come back.
Yeah, and they're under contract. I would expect they'll be back barring a trade.
Right, and MCW, I mean, he's going into the last year of his rookie deal, and yeah, he's coming off hip surgery. So the question is, if the Bucks were going to be rid of him, it would take trading him, and right now his value is not very good compared to what it could be.
Right, and I think the Bucks still feel he can help them out, maybe in a different role than what they expected when they made the trade at the deadline. It will be, the deadline in 2015. It'll be interesting to see. But we've heard time and again now about the shooting needs, so it's going to be real interesting to see how they can try to solve that. And I also think, you know, it won't just be a guard. They'll be looking for a four-man. You know, Teletovic is an example, a guy who came off the bench. He's a free agent. He came off the bench in Phoenix and shot the 3 extremely well. He knows Jason Kidd, played for him in Brooklyn. So would that be somebody the Bucks might be interested in? You'd have to speculate that it might be. You know, they're going to, I think, want to find a stretch 4 that can shoot, especially when Jabari's the other 4 and he's more of a slasher and dunker. So I think that would really fit the roster, as well as some shooting, you know, a 2-guard or a 1-guard, whatever we want to say that guard is, Matt, who's going to be playing in there with Giannis some of the time, who could shoot. You need a guard with Giannis who can extend the floor.
Yeah, and if you're going to look, you know, if you're looking for guys who could be like a stretch 4, there's not a ton of them in the top 10 range. Obviously, the one
no,
that local
I was talking
fans
more
would
the
know.
Free agents, not the draft. Yeah.
Right.
Is there anyone in the draft?
Well, I mean, Henry Ellenson would be the closest one to fit that bill around the place where the Bucks will be drafting. And he didn't shoot very well at Marquette from 3-point range, at least not where a lot of folks expected him to be. But his free throw percentage, which tends to be a good predictor of shooting ability, it was very good. About 80%, I think a little bit shy, but
it's good.
And considering the volume that he had and the amount of physical exertion he had going into the games, but you know, he's a guy who, if you're drafting him at 10, we'll pretend the Bucks stay at 10 and the lottery goes exactly according to the order. He probably, based on the Bucks personnel, wouldn't be projected to start for any time in the near future, because Giannis and Jabari play where he'd be playing. So he'd be coming off the bench unless a team decided to use him as like a small ball. I mean, I don't know if it's really a small ball 5, but you know, he could, if he added some size, obviously he's only 19, if he added some bulk and stuff, you could consider him being a 5. Obviously, he'd need to improve on his defense, defending the pick and roll, and being more physical, and not getting into foul trouble against NBA quality players. But you might be able to consider him, at least for stretches, not for a whole game, at the 5, depending on the lineups you're dealing with.
He's going to have a learning curve, you know.
Oh yeah.
Time, just like all these young players that come to the league. do, but it'll be interesting to follow him, and you certainly know him, so it'll be interesting to see how he does through the draft process, and you know, in the lottery, does he get picked in that range, which is kind of the thought right now.
Yeah, so, and so as we mentioned with talking about the issues facing the Bucks for the summer, we'll talk about these things a lot, and obviously the NBA draft combine, which we will both be attending in Chicago in the second week of May, that's coming up, and I think that's when we'll do our next podcast, is after that combine. We can
interesting. We can update on some of these prospects.
Mm-hmm. And shortly after
the lottery, the lottery coming up on May 17th.
I was going to say right after the combine is when we'll know what the order looks like, and then we can start getting into, you know, where the Bucks are, what they need, who they've talked to, all that stuff. Not to mention they have 2 second round picks, and they're decent second round picks. I believe they're 36 and 38. So those are of interest. Those are possible trade pieces. Those are possible usable players. So we'll have to see. So I think that brings us to the end of our podcast here, Charles. What do you think?
Very good. I think so. Great job, Matt. And we thanks for all your help this year. You've just been terrific and helping me out. And you had your Marquette duties too. And during my surgery and after that, I can't thank you enough. And we'll just be heading on and looking forward to a busy summer. It seems like it's always a busy summer, and this one is going to be no exception.
Absolutely. It'll be fun. We'll try to make it fun, at the very least.
You bet.
All right. Well, thank you, everybody, for following along all season with the new and hopefully continuing into next season Journal Sentinel Milwaukee Bucks podcast. As always, you can find our latest podcast at jsonline.com/Bucks in the Bucks blog, where you can stream it, you can download it, you can listen to it any way you please. If you subscribe via iTunes or Stitcher, you can also get the latest podcast sent to your phone or tablet as soon as it's posted, and that's the most efficient way to get the podcast and be able to listen to it as soon as possible. So thanks again for listening, and we'll talk to you in about a month.